It's a country which remained shrouded in a cloak of mystery for centuries. But over the past few decades, a transformation has taken place in China. And as China continues to grow and prosper, understanding today's China is becoming that much more important to the world. This is The Business of China, with your hosts, veteran journalists Doug Young and Paul James.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Paul James with you here on The Business of China, along with my co-host, Doug Young.
Hello.
Good day, my friend. Today we're going to be talking about the withdrawal of Amazon from the market, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the movie industry here in China.
Yes, our favorite.
Yeah, I like that too. But let's get into Amazon first and foremost. So the company says, no mas, we're done. What's the background? Give us the full scoop as to why Bezos says no mas to China.
Yeah, Bezos doesn't seem to be very present in any of this.
He's going through a bit of a divorce issue right now.
Yeah, but it's interesting. Of all the big tech chiefs, he's like the one who's like noticeably never ever been seen in China. Mm. You know, you see like Tim Cook is here all the time. Who's the Microsoft guy? I can't remember his name. No. Nadella, the current CEO. He comes here all the time.
Sure. Zuckerberg.
Although he hasn't come here lately, but he was here all the time. But yeah, Bezos does not seem to be. If he comes, he may come here, and he just doesn't. He isn't high profile about it. But anyhow, the story, and it actually was quite a murky story because Reuters broke it first from the States, where they didn't really seem to know quite what was happening, whereas us people here in China are a little more familiar with the story. The story is that basically Amazon is closing what should have been the biggest part of its business, which is the business of operating a web store where people in China can buy products from that are sourced in China. So they can be products from either third-party merchants, you know, like eBay style, or Amazon also does some of its own sourcing in China.
Yeah.
So that part they're closing, but then they actually are leaving the rest of their businesses intact. And you're going to say, well, what's the rest of their business? The rest is this cross-border e-commerce where people in China can buy products, you know, from the US, from France, whatever, UK, which, you know, really sort of draws on their strength and, you know, all their global operation. Then the other thing they're leaving is the Kindles. They'll keep doing China Kindles and presumably operating a China Kindle store. And then the last thing is they will keep doing their cloud services.
Right. Okay, so let's, I guess, break it down into different parts then. The first and foremost, I get a bit broader view. I mean, did Amazon just kind of take a look at the numbers and go, well, we can't compete with Alibaba and JD and these guys, and you know, what's the point? Is that the estimation?
Or? Well, this is the big question. Amazon wasn't like saying, hey, let's have a press conference to tell everybody why we bombed in China. But, you know, the numbers sort of speak for themselves. Their market share was never great to start with, but I think it was going from like bad to almost non-existent.
Infinitesimal.
It was like sort of less than 1% apparently when they made this decision. So in that sense, it's probably a no-brainer. I'm guessing it was probably not earning any profits. So, you know, it's this infinitesimal thing in a market where, you know, they got to compete with Alibaba and JD. You know, they just said, why are we doing this?
Well, did they do enough, in your estimation, let's say due diligence first, and second of all, you know, the marketing campaign? Because, I mean, realistically, I don't see Amazon anywhere.
I actually asked a bunch of people about it. I wrote about it this week, and I think there's two factors here, and I think one is really very China specific. Well, both I guess are China specific. I think one of them is just China is just the land where it's very difficult for anyone to do internet business because investors are so willing to give companies just gobs and gobs of money for years, year after year after year, without making a profit. And you know, Western companies want to see that profit, you know, within like 2 or 3 years. You know, they're willing to put up with losses for a few years. But in China, you know, you just see companies like Luckin, you know, this coffee company. Of course, they're only 2 years old, and they just filed for an IPO.
Very nice one.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, they're just losing money hand over fist. And Alibaba, you know, before they became profitable, they were losing money for years. And there are lots of companies. I mean, JD.com, who's the number two e-commerce player, they've never made money. Mm. And, you know, this is like a, well, I shouldn't say they've never made money, maybe, but never made money in their current form, you know, which is probably at least 10, 15 years. And yet people are still willing to pump money into them. And, you know, if I'm a U.S. company or any Western company, I'm going to say, gee, do I sit here and just wait for these companies to all go belly up? And then while they go belly up, someone else is going to come in to lose more money and get more money. You know, so this is a very difficult market.
Well, but then I guess that brings me back to my first point is that, I mean, did they not understand and do the due diligence and understand the market properly?
Well, Amazon's been here for a long time. And I mean, you know, is that really due diligence? You know, I think that's really only something that's probably happened like in the last 7-8 years that where just investors have just been willing to just pile just, you know, on a company like Ofo or Mobike, you know, these companies with no business model,
right?
You know, and just giving them hundreds of millions of dollars. I think that sort of happened in the last 7-8 years. So,
well, no, but what I'm saying is that, I mean, that's fine and good for you to say that it's been, you know, this has been this trend for the past 7 or 8 years. But I mean, if you don't understand what the trend is next month in the world of business, you know, you could be, you know, sitting on the sidelines.
Well, so, I think that's what probably what happened with Amazon is they've been here for like 15 years and they were saying, we've already pumped this much money in the market. Mm. You know, we don't want to throw it all out the window. And, you know, so, but I mean, finally, they did sit down and say, hey, this isn't going to get any better anytime soon. It's sort of a losing situation. Let's just cut our losses and, sure, and move on to the next thing.
Well, let's cut a little deeper then. You mentioned the Kindle thing. Did you ever use one of those, by the way?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Actually, I have a U.S. Kindle, though, and not a Chinese one.
See, I never really got the concept of it because, I mean, with the tablet technology being what it is now, I mean, you know, you can have all-in-one. You know, you don't need just a specific reader.
Well,
I never quite got through my head.
I mean, have you used one?
I've borrowed friends, you know, just to play around with it.
Well, the thing that's really nice about it, the reason I like them, and I have a laptop too, is one, it's like super light.
Yeah.
You know, if you're like reading off
everyone
a laptop,
reads in bed.
It's like,
yeah,
it's like carrying around this, you know, whatever, 2-pound book. Mm. Who wants that? It's super light, and then also it uses much less battery.
You've seen some of the tomes that I had to read in university. But
yeah, well, that's true. but these are, you know, but those tomes would have fit, you know, 5,000 of them would have fit on a Kindle.
Yeah.
But, and like I said, so it's small, it's light, and its battery lasts a long time.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you're using a tablet, battery is like maybe 2-3 hours.
Sure.
Like a Kindle you can use for 10, 15, 20 hours on a charge.
Yeah, because CPU is not sucking a lot of juice. I get it, but
yeah. Exactly.
So what's the deal then with that? I mean,
well, so the Kindles, you know, it's a very niche product, and I think you do see Chinese people around. Also, the other nice thing about the Kindles is I like the size better. You don't really see it's smaller than a tablet. It's like, you know, maybe this big.
Sure,
that's good, Doug. Yeah, that's right.
the size of a giant piece of bread.
Yeah. Well, do you want to?
Yeah. Well, Tanner was, you know, mouthing something off off on the side here, saying that part of the advantages, of course, beyond this is as you were saying, brighter, or sorry, not as bright.
Easier on the
eyes.
The
much like Tanner.
Yeah. They replicate the book page reading experience, which is apparently softer in the eyes, etc.
Okay.
And then also the other thing Tanner's pointing out is you don't have all these other programs popping up with Windows and stuff. It's a much more, you know, it's a much nicer reading experience.
Sure. I mean, if that's what you're into,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I can do, you know, walk and chew gum at the same time. So that doesn't really bother me all that much. But in the same respect, I get where you're coming from. So, I mean, what's the ultimate thing then when it comes to these Kindles? I mean, what's...
I think basically Amazon took a step back and said, hey, this one business that competes with everybody and their mother who do it much better than us is just not happening. So let's close that. But, you know, the Kindles, I think, do have some traction. And then the other business I mentioned, also the cloud services,
right.
You know.
Well, that's what I wanted to get into lastly.
But these are like the businesses where Amazon feels like, you know, it does have some competitive advantage, you know, it can make a profit. Let's stick with those.
Right. Cloud computing. I mean, this is something that's obviously been around for a little while, but one that, I don't know. I mean, you hear a little bit about it here in China, but not a lot. I mean, it's something that the government has been pushing forward, but I don't hear of any major players sort of getting, you know, heavy into it.
Well, locally. Alibaba is like Alibaba Cloud, or they call it Ali Cloud, I think. They're huge into it. Huawei's, the thing is that, and then actually Microsoft, they have this product called Azure. Mm. I mean, China's a bit of a strange beast in that essentially the foreign companies aren't allowed to own any infrastructure. So they always have to work with a Chinese partner.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, Amazon Cloud Services is probably working with, you know, some data center operator, and Alibaba, you know, has their own operation, I think, because they're local. Mm. But you're right, it's not as high profile a business, but yeah. It's essentially just storing information off-site.
One of the big things is that it requires a huge amount of CPU space, and you need these big, you know, data centers and whatnot. I mean, is it a lack of logistics, lack of infrastructure that, you know, is sort of, I guess...
Well, I think part of it is it's not a consumer product, so consumers don't hear that much about it, but I think if you were to go into, you know, some big business expo, they would all be talking about, you know, oh, we use cloud for this, we use cloud for that. You know, it's much more of an enterprise, as they say in the business. So, I mean, you know, it's like that with everything. You know, there could be some amazing software that all the enterprises are using, but it's not really a consumer name, so you won't really see it.
Yeah.
It won't be nearly as visible, and the companies won't spend big amounts of money, you know, to raise the brand awareness sort of in the general public.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a tangible thing, so you can't really put your, you know, your hands on it and your fingers on it sort of thing. But I mean, it is becoming more important, especially now with the advancement of, or the push forward, I guess, of the 5G technology here in China, which is going to require vaster amounts of, you know, data storage and stuff like that. So, I mean, is this, you know, an area where, companies may start to branch out into? And I mean, is Amazon sort of reading the tea leaves a little bit on this front? And
so, well, Amazon is huge. I mean, they're the world's biggest cloud services provider
now. But I mean, here in China.
In China, yeah, I think it's big in China, and China has earmarked it. It's just not, like I said, as visible probably here as it is in other places. But, you know, all the big companies, Tencent, Alibaba, they all offer, you know, cloud storage mostly. So it's there.
So, I mean, let's scale it back then and just talk about Amazon's overall footprint here in China. I mean, with the withdrawal of some of their products and services and things of this nature, I mean, what do you see as far as their future is concerned? I mean, this is obviously a major market and something that you just can't ignore. But in the same respect, is this the first sign of things to come for this company here
for Amazon? No, I think they can do pretty well in the areas that they're focusing on. You know, and that's like that with any company. You know, companies go into new businesses. I think the big difference here is that, you know, this was the biggest business. I mean, it's been a huge business for Alibaba, but clearly the market's showing maybe there's not room for that many players here. Mm-hmm. And people do talk about, I did some asking around, you know, the Amazon experience, and I got a few beefs, you know, like Amazon didn't get it. They didn't offer enough customer support. Their delivery wasn't as good as JD's. Their prices weren't as good as Taobao's. You know, it seems like they were doing everything, but not as good as Alibaba and JD. So, you know, they just weren't offering that compelling of a product.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see how it plays out in the wash. We're going to take a quickie break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about a product which everybody loves, animation and films and the film industry. Stay with us here on The Business of China.
You're listening to The Business of China.
Business of China.
From China Plus.
And And welcome back to The Business of China. Paul James, along with my co-host, Doug Young. We were talking about Amazon's fortunes in the first half of our program. We're going to shift focus a little bit and start talking about everybody's favorite thing here in China these days, animated films. Well, I mean, not everybody's favorite thing. I'm not saying I don't like animated films. I do. In fact, some of the stuff like Pixar and things like these, like the major players put out, they're actually pretty good. They do well in crafting storylines, and there's something for the kids and there's something for the adults in most of these films. And so I can actually sit down and watch some of these things. And,
there was a good one a couple of years ago. It was called Coco, about the Mexican. Did you see that one?
I did not.
Oh, okay. Anyway, it was quite good, and it had good story, but saying, it's good for kids,
right.
But adults can
sort of enjoy them as well. And I think that's sort of this nice little middle ground that you can sort of please everybody. And I guess maybe that's part of the reason, we'll talk about it, that Oriental DreamWorks coming back into the roots, as it were. So explain for our listeners what's going on here.
Well, this one, it's a bit of a complex story. I think most of our listeners out there probably know DreamWorks, right?
Yeah.
That's the Steven Spielberg and then Jeffrey Katzenberg and David Geffen set up this studio.
Geffen involved, really?
Geffen was it was SKG.
Oh, that's
G
right.
Was the Geffen.
It was the Geffen. Yeah.
Geffen,
okay.
S. Spielberg, K. Katzenberg, and they set this thing up back in the 90s, and it's slowly sort of come apart since then. Mm. But they at one point they branched off. They split off. The animation was always Jeffrey Katzenberg's baby, and they split that off because I think they wanted to take the whole thing public at one point, but the movies and the music weren't happening. Katzenberg was getting impatient, so they split it off as a separate company and did an IPO for it, and Katzenberg was the boss of DreamWorks Animation, and they basically signed this pretty landmark deal. It was right around the time China was opening its movie market a bit more. This would have been back in around 2013
or so, about 5 years ago.
Five, 6 years ago now. And so DreamWorks was the first one to sign a pretty big tie-up with a Chinese company, a local Shanghai company, and they set up Oriental DreamWorks. So Katzenberg, was Mr. China, rah, rah, rah. He was one of these people who would show up at every China event. We were talking about how Bezos doesn't show up, but Katzenberg was definitely in the Tim Cook camp. He would show up regularly at all these China events and be rah-rah China. So that was the story with this joint venture. There was a lot of hype. Katzenberg was here all the time. This joint venture actually made the third Kung Fu Panda movie because that was owned by DreamWorks Animation. And, things weren't happening, basically.
Yeah.
And Katzenberg knew things. Not only things weren't happening with China, they weren't happening with DreamWorks Animation in general. And so about 2 years ago, he sold the company to Comcast, which owns NBC Universal. Comcast, NBC Universal really did not have the same enthusiasm for China as Katzenberg. And so guess what? About a year ago, they basically sold out their stake in Oriental DreamWorks to the Chinese partner. So now it's become a completely Chinese company, and it's also actually got a new name now. It's called Pearl Studio. But interestingly, they've kept the same Chinese name, the Chinese for Oriental DreamWorks. But yeah, it's an interesting story because they essentially lost all their IP, and they didn't have that much IP. But that's a big part of how studios make money, is toy licensing deals.
Sure.
And you open schools, with your cute little characters and all this.
Ask George Lucas about that.
I mean, it's just like, this is a big part. And they suddenly lost all of that because it really all belonged to DreamWorks Animation.
Yeah.
So the company's been sort of going back to square one in a lot of ways. And they just had a sort of like a coming out day or whatever you would say, a meet the press to sort of tell people 1 year after the buyout, how are they doing? And it was interesting. They're going back to sort of basics, but really trying to do one animated feature a year. And I just like some of these. They detailed a couple of the movies they're working on. One is this one coming up that'll be released around the October 1 holiday this year, called abominable.
Right.
And then the other one is going to be coming out next year, which is called...
Over the Moon.
Over the Moon. And they both have very China-specific storylines, but Parole Studio. But the new owners are really emphasizing they still are trying to make, you know, animated features with global appeal that won't just be for China.
Yeah. Now... Obviously, there's a market for film here in China, particularly animated films. And a lot of things animated really goes over quite well here in China.
Yeah.
Who's backing Pearl? And I mean, how much available capital will they have to sort of get things or continuing things going? Because, I mean, SKG, they had a lot of money, you know?
I think that's been an issue, and that's why they're slowing down to one film per year, at least for the next 3 years, is what they said. I mean, you know, these things don't have small budgets. I imagine one probably costs at least 40, 50 million to make, you know, these 3D animations.
Yeah, depends on how deep you're going to go, and that's what it was.
They say they want these to be world-class movies. And actually, they've gotten, the next two both have Hollywood directors. I mean, they're not just trying to save money. It seems like they're serious, at least based on what they say and what they're doing right now. For talking a $40, $50 million budget, we're still only talking $100 million over a couple of years, which is a lot. It's a lot for me or you, but hopefully it's not too much for these guys who do have some funding. The current China partners, it's really a Shanghai show. I mean, it's the big Shanghai broadcaster. It's called Shanghai Media Group. Mm. And then sort of their sister companies called China Media Capital, CMC.
Right. So let's get back into the marketability of the whole thing, because this is kind of interesting, because you mentioned that they're going to do like a sort of Chinese-oriented films. Abominable, I'm assuming, is about the Abominable Snowman.
Yeah.
Why they wouldn't call it Yeti then? That's the part that doesn't really make sense to me, because that's the Chinese version of the Abominable Snowman.
Well, I think... Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen the movie, but I mean, in descriptions of the movie, you do see them use the word Yeti. So it's a, you know, maybe it's a marketing thing.
Sure. And then the other one, Over the Moon.
That's very Chinese.
Yeah, exactly.
And we should actually back up and tell everyone, you know, the Yeti originated in the Himalayas. Why it's a China angle.
Though. Right. But so Over the Moon, this one, it's... Or it's supposed to be, at least, based on the Chang'e story, right?
Not so much. I mean, it incorporates the Chang'e story, but right, this is like a very popular Chinese sort of folk legend. Is about some forbidden. I have to admit, I don't know the whole story, but there's
about forbidden love.
Forbidden love, and the couple somehow dies, and the woman, whose name is Chang'e, somehow ends up getting to the moon.
Yeah, and turns into a raven at some point. I don't know. Yeah. I get lost in a lot of the minutia of it as well. But that's an interesting story. And I mean, but is it going to be can you market Chinese stories and Chinese folklore to an international audience?
That's the thing about this story, is it's sort of Chang'e with a modern spin, because it's not that story. It's about a 21st century young girl or teenager, I don't know how old she is, but basically gets it into her head that she wants to go and find Chang'e, who's of course on the moon. So she does what every 21st century girl in China would do, and goes online to Taobao, which is like you can buy anything. It's like the online flea market, and apparently she buys all the components she needs to build her own rocket, and then embarks on a rocket journey to the moon to go search for Chang'e. So it's not really the story of Chang'e per se.
Sure, but I mean, getting back to the point, is because China's got a huge, you know, cachet of folklore. I mean,
tons of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, half the language is built around idioms, which are based on, you know, folklore and stories and stuff like that. So, it's an integral part of what is the Chinese persona. But if you're not from China and you don't really understand the concepts of it, I mean, if you're trying to market Chinese philosophies and films to an international audience, do you get lost in it? Because, I mean, aside from Kung Fu, you know, the vast majority of the world still kind of has a bit of a blank on this.
Well, you know, you have to look. I mean, Disney, don't forget, did Mulan. I don't know if you remember that. That's actually very popular. Chinese. And it was a Chinese tale. So, I think that's one of the, for people who don't know about that one, that's like about a girl who goes into war
because like to be your father
pretends to be a man and all this stuff. But it's again a very famous Chinese sort of folklore. I think, you know, you need to have a Westerner or at least a non-Chinese doing this so they can say these are the places where you might need a little more explanation because I don't get it. And in that regard, they've done, you know, what I think seems pretty smart and gotten to Hollywood veterans. You know, I looked them up online and they're both, you know, have lots of animation experience. I don't know if they have directorial experience, but working on other animation a lot with Disney, and one worked on both the first two Toy Story movies. So, you know, these are people who'll say, well, wait, why should people know why this woman is on the moon? You know, they'll like, you know, answer those questions that maybe would come up in the minds of non-Chinese. And
right. The other thing, too, about marketability, though, is that a lot of these films, even though you don't see the actors themselves, they're getting big names to do the voices and stuff like that. And, I mean, you know, your Jack Blacks would, you know, he came kind of cheap at the beginning for Kung Fu Panda because he wasn't doing a heck of a lot after School of Rock. But, you know,
there's a great one.
But beyond that, I mean, he was sort of an aberration in that. He was cheap enough for them to get, but I mean that was still an American production. Actors who are going to voice these things, they're going to demand, you know, $10 million, $15 million. If it's a big name.
If they want big names, I think. You know, I don't know, to be honest. I know that this Pearl Studio / Oriental DreamWorks, they still obviously have the DreamWorks connection, and then they also have a NBC Universal connection through the whole Comcast deal. So they've already got distribution deals with them. I think NBC Universal is whatever their distribution arm is going to do, their non-China distribution. You know, so they've got the guanxi they need to, you know, get the voices, whether or not they'll have the budget to pay for Jack Blacks or big name actors is another question. But again, that
sort of leads me to my sort of point, is that is there enough collaboration between the industries here in China, the film industry here in China, and Hollywood or Bollywood or wherever the rest of the world makes their films these days to get a proper campaign going to make a Chinese based movie, you know, a global phenomenon,
hasn't really happened yet.
Yeah,
I don't think we've seen any. They said, what was that? The one that's out now, the app, wasn't it the one, the sci-fi one?
The Wandering Planet.
Yeah, Wandering Planet.
Yeah,
they were going to try and do that globally, but I don't know if it did or not.
It's a Tanner mouthing yet again. I made a mistake. It's the what did you say? Wandering Planet or Wandering Earth?
I think it's Wandering Earth.
Okay, fine. Jeez, just say use your words, boy. But anyway, films like that, they put in a lot of production elements and quality into it. It was, I guess, the most advanced post-production that they've ever really done here in China.
Yeah.
And apparently it's gone off fairly well, but there's the one element to it, which is, of course, the production, which you can do. I mean, there's enough tech-savvy people here in China now who can produce these sort of good films. But then you get back to what you were talking about, distribution and marketing.
Yeah, I mean that's a big issue.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they're like I said, they're getting their distribution from NBC Universal.
Sure.
So that'll help. And then, you know, if someone's going to distribute you outside of China, presumably they'll help with the marketing campaign.
Sure.
So they'll have some help. I don't know if they'll have a lot of help. We'll have to see how these movies look, to be honest, but it sounds like they have the potential to be okay. And you know, this company, Pearl Studio, they say they still have operations in LA, New York, and Shanghai, which is the original studio. So you know, if it's really still the international studio it was before,
Yeah, but okay,
never know.
Beyond animation, I'll just get real quick, because I mean, there have been so many live action forays here into China that have gone off like a fart in an elevator. I'm thinking of the Matt Damon flop.
The Great Wall. Yeah.
A few others that have come out, and I mean, they've put so much hype into these things. Or at least here locally, and then they bomb. And I mean, is that going to be a problem in the future for the film industry here in China, just because of the track record of what's sort of gone on?
Well, I think eventually they'll start making. I mean, The Great Wall. People, it's always easy to be an armchair quarterback and say what went wrong, but it just
I watched
like
about 10 minutes of it, and I couldn't watch anymore. I literally went, what the hell is this?
Okay. Well, apparently they should have brought you in earlier
production. I'm no Siskel and Ebert, but,
it was not your thing.
Yeah.
I think there's no reason the Chinese can't be good storytellers and good producers. I mean, they are good at picking up other things, so... they're new at it. Hollywood's got a 100-year history behind it. China's got a 20-year history behind it.
That's a bit
give
of a...
Them, give them a little time.
No, I mean, that's a bit facetious, though. There was a huge film industry back in the Shanghai back in the 20s, but they had a bit of a gap.
Yeah, there was a large gap in which they probably managed to stifle and put away and whatever, get rid of anybody with any knowledge.
But anyway, last question for you on just the broader animation and the film industry, animated film industry here in China. Pearl, you said, they come with some help from back before, but I mean, is there room for investing in startups to create a larger or at least create some competition for Pearl in the future? I mean,
China has apparently has a pretty vibrant animation community already.
But they're not really doing feature films, though.
They are. They're doing like Monkey King type stuff.
It's all for a domestic market. That's what I'm saying.
If you're talking about international, that's the million-dollar question. Is anybody, not just animation or live action, ever going to be able to, get outside the China bubble? Because so far, like we just said, they haven't been able to do it. Again, I think probably they should be able to, and who knows? Maybe Pearl. We'll have to stay tuned for Abominable and see how it does. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like they're really, because I mean, in China, too often companies just don't even think about the international market. So you got to start thinking about it before you can really even, try to make something that's going to work there. So these guys at least are thinking that way, and like I say, they're hiring foreign directors, trying to make them more, something that can have a market outside of China. But at the same time, they are obviously aware that China's their bread and butter. That's where they got the advantage. And there's also a lot less competition in China.
Yeah. Oh, and just one last note on the whole the movie thing before we wrap up here. Did you see the ticket pre-sales for
Avengers? The Avengers.
Oh, my God.
That was the movie that broke the box office before it even opened. We have a few people in our office who apparently stayed up till midnight. I think one saw it at midnight because it officially debuted today
here in China Wednesday.
So the first shows,
And it doesn't even debut until day after tomorrow or Friday in the States, right?
It's opening in China before the States.
Yeah, I think so.
I didn't realize that, but there's some. Some people in our office were big Avengers fans, and I haven't gone around the newsroom looking, but I've heard that one or two people might be a bit tired today. So,
Wearing your Iron Man mask and
that's right.
The Hulk gloves.
I didn't realize we had so many movie fans. Apparently we do.
Well, and that's the thing, is that it potentially is a lucrative business, so we'll see how Pearl makes up for themselves in the future. But that's all the time we have for this edition of The Business of China. On behalf of co-host Doug Young, Tanner Brown, and myself, Paul James, thanks a lot for listening.
Hey, thanks.
From China Plus, this has been a China Plus production. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe to the podcast for free. If you have any comments about the episodes, just send us an email, podcast@cri.com.cn. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at China Plus News.